Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. Are you ready for a snowstorm of global proportion? Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just hit your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're live on October 7th, 2015 at 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. My guest today, critically acclaimed writer-director Billy Clift of Baby Jane fame, to discuss not only his career but his latest film, Hush Up, Sweet Charlotte, an homage to the 1964 Hush Hush, Sweet Charlotte film starring the iconic actresses Bette Davis and Olivia de Havilland. The film tells of an aging, reclusive Southern belle with a horrifying hidden family secret. It tracks her descent into madness with the help of a lost relative as she fights to save her family's historic plantation. In the film, the leads are parody performances by gender illusionist superstars Matthew Martin and Varla Jean Merman. The feature role of housekeeper Velma, originally performed by Agnes Moorehead, is played by Mink Stole, made famous by cult film director John Waters. Other cast members include accomplished comedian, my friend, actor Jason Stewart, star of stage and screen David Milburn, rising star Jesse Pepe, Raja Gemini of RuPaul's Drag Race, plus San Francisco drag icons Katya Smirnoff-Sky, Ethel Merman, Honey Mahogany, Heklina, and more. So coming up, a very fascinating interview with Billy Clift, but let me first play you a teaser from the trailer of the film. You can find this teaser to watch the video on YouTube. Search Hush Up Sweet Charlotte teaser, but I'm going to play you the audio now to sort of give you a sense of the spirit and tone of the film, and then I'll be back with Billy Clift.
Based on a real movie. In 1927, the Hollis Plantation was the site of a brutal murder.
Why would you be coming all the way from London, England, to investigate an old case like this? The only journalists coming around these parts is so they can write trash.
Well, it's like this, Sheriff. I've never been involved in a case that I haven't solved.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me to find out that June Mayhem was behind all this. I heard she was ailing. She deserves to be ill. She deserves to die!
I want you to take this and give it to the Sheriff. Promise you'll never open it till I have passed. Even if they strip you naked and beat your testicles with tiny little bats.
Damn you all! That's my land he's plowing up down there.
Now looky here, Miss Charlotte. Nobody's plowing up your land. You must be seeing things. Your house is coming down in the next week.
Where you are, I could speak in your eye with no strain at all.
You notice they're not laying a finger on him. They're destroying my house, but they're not touching him.
Charlie, don't be silly. You're sounding quite mad. Bad, insane, wacky, off the deep end, crazy, delirious, demented, psychotic, bananas, cuckoo, irrational, and loony. And a bit mental.
Velma's dead.
Oh, my word.
Now, Melanie, I've got the upper hand. I'm the Mary, you're the Rhoda.
This town is very minuscule, Mr. Willis. It's full of dark, dirty little secrets.
Darling, that's a surprise.
hillbilly for every cent she's got.
Just one more little nudge, and she'll be ready to be locked up for the rest of the day.
And nowhere near as demented as his characters, coming up in about 2 minutes, writer-director Billy Clift, who wrote the madness you just listened to. I've seen the film. It's funny. More after this.
The snowstorm continues after this.
Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
Hi. I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the show. He's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and to media outlets throughout the world. He's an author, singer, songwriter, actor, and activist, and the executive producer and host of NicholasSnow.tv. He has created and continues to do so a snowstorm of global proportions dedicated to connecting the circuitry of humanity. And now, drifting into the studio and your life once again, Nicholas Snow.
So if you are in the San Francisco Bay Area and you happen to hear this before October 28, 2015, you're in luck because the official world premiere of Hush Up, Sweet Charlotte is happening that night at the famed Castro Theater. For information about this particular event, search Hush Up, Sweet Charlotte on Facebook. And this podcast exists in perpetuity, but so will the film as it shows up in theaters elsewhere and ultimately most likely on a television set near you as well. So this podcast will always be very informing. And without further ado, I'd love to welcome to the show writer-director Billy Clift. Hey, Billy, so nice to have you.
Hi. Hi. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Well,
or on the phone or wherever I am.
Yes, you know, so much of my day is figuring out who and where I am.
I understand what you're doing, what you mean.
Yes,
me
exactly.
Too. I don't know whether I'm doing, like today I was doing the making of Hush Up, Sweet Charlotte on the computer all day. And then I'm also was planning a shoot on Saturday for another shoot for my short film, Monty. And just, you know, and, you know, I'm jumping around all these different worlds, and you completely get confused on where you are.
Exactly. And speaking of where you are you in the Bay Area right now?
No, I live in Los Angeles.
Okay, that's what I thought, but then you at one point you lived in the Bay Area because of your 415 area code.
Yes, I did. I lived there for 14 years, and I moved up there soon after my dear friend Elizabeth Montgomery had passed, and I was a hair and makeup artist for my whole career as in the world, so to speak, besides that being a model just out of high school and all that crap, but realized I couldn't be a pretty face all my life. And so I thought I better do something stable, you know, like become a hairdresser. So after she passed away, I kind of really went through a re-looking at my life and really what I wanted to do. And I just felt like I needed to stop what I was doing, which was being a hair and makeup man in Hollywood, and move away. And I was always attracted to San Francisco. It's an old family city. The Clift Hotel, which is there, was old family. That was a great uncle who started the Clift Hotel. And it's always been a magical place for me. And I think it was a place that I wanted to go and try to figure out what I really wanted to do with my life after she passed away. It kind of changed how I viewed everything. And it was exactly what I needed.
Now, I understand she was your good friend. Did you meet her through working for her? How did you come to know her?
Yes, that's exactly. It was the 82, I think it was. I was called in to do her hair and makeup for a test shoot for one of the TV movies that she had done, and it just so happened that I was such an Elizabeth Montgomery fan. I mean, who wasn't? Especially in our age category, I mean, we just grew up with Bewitched. And so I was just blown away that I was going to have the possibility that I might start working with her. And I the first thing I was asked to come to her house and just kind of hang out and see how we got along, because she was actually looking for a new hair and makeup artist. She had stopped working with someone, or I didn't really get the whole story, and it didn't matter to me. All I cared was she was looking for somebody. So I, drove up to her house on Benedict Canyon, and I remember being such a nervous wreck and driving up this long road past the tennis court and swimming pools and all this, and there she is standing right in front of her house, and I just, like, my heart dropped, and I got out and met her, and we just instantly just connected, and we were very, very close. And of course the relationship got closer and closer as we got to know each other even better. And I felt so fortunate that she was a friend of mine, because she was so amazing, such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful lady.
And did you go on then to work with her for the rest of her life?
Yes, until she passed in 95. And I worked with her on a TV movie just 6 months prior to her passing, where we did not know that she was actually had inoperable colon cancer. She had been constantly going to the hospital for pains, or talking to her doctor and having checkups and testings. And according to her, he said that she just had some hemorrhoids and they needed to be worked on. And that even while we were working on the film, she was in such great pain that I had to consistently give her painkillers every 6 hours so that she could continue to work. And the pain got worse and worse through the film, which was about a month of work. And I remember a week later, after the film ended, I got a call from her saying that she was going into the hospital, but she didn't know when she'd ever come out. And so that was the last. I did get to see her one time in the hospital. She was home when she passed away, and I was at her house the day before. But of course, nobody was going up to see her except, her family, her children, and her husband at the time.
Wow, that's a powerful story, and the loss of her friendship and life inspired you to kind of reevaluate who you were and where you were headed.
Exactly. I just. I just stopped. It just stopped my world, you know, as death can for you. And it's interesting because I've had so many people pass away from, or died, I should use that word, not just pass away, from AIDS. I loved hearing the little promo that you had for the AIDS work that happens in the desert there. And I think I'd become numb, as we all did, I believe, when we constantly heard of another person or another dear friend or someone we hadn't seen in so long. So I also believe that it was a combination. Her death was a combination of all those deaths that had happened prior to that, and that it all hit me at once at her death, because she was so close. It just became that sound fork or whatever, you know, that just kind of hits you right in the heart. And it broke me, and I could not work anymore. I couldn't even function properly. I couldn't think properly. And I realized that I needed to stop and just take myself out of the location. I needed to remove myself. And actually, I went first to Pacific Grove, which is right near Monterey, and I wrote a book about how I was feeling called Everything's Going to Be Just Fine. And that came out in 2001. And it was about her passing and how it affected me.
Wow. And then you ended up in the Bay Area. Were you actually living in the city?
Yes, I was. I was living right in the heart of the city. First, I was living right near Alamo Square, and then soon after, in Noe Valley, right over the hill from the Castro, and lived there until 90. God, when did I move? I can't remember. But it's been 4 years since I've been back to Los Angeles, where I'm from. The film industry is the reason why I came back. Plus, my mother, she's an older woman, and I wanted to be around her. She's in her early 90s, and she's still kicking. And so I wanted to be able to enjoy her for as much time as she has on this planet. But it was for the film industry, because once I did realize in San Francisco and everything just kind of like settled, I also am HIV like yourself and became very ill in 2001 and did recover from that like so many other, thank goodness so many of us have. Then when everything did settle, I kind of reflected, what do I really, really want to do with my life? I this is the time to do it. And it was something that I repressed and ignored, that I really wanted to become a director and I wanted to tell stories on film. So I had been told by a wonderful director, a big director, that the smartest thing to do was find a niche market and kick it and just kick ass with it. Just focus on that and work all your magic in that area and then slowly build up. And so that's what I'm doing. So it's been about 6-7 years that I've been focusing on being a director and fulfilling that dream that I've always had.
And I'm guessing by two of your films that your niche market is middle-aged gay men that love Betty Davis.
Well, you know, I mean, I pulled on what I know and what I think is funny, right? Or what I'm attracted to. I mean, that's what you
No,
do,
that's
right?
Great. You have to do what you love.
Yeah, you stand there and you go, okay. And it all started, actually, with seeing Matthew Martin, my Betty Davis impersonator, or whatever you might want to call him, because he's really an amazing actor who plays one of his things that he does. He does Betty Davis, and I think he does it brilliantly. And it was seeing him in a play called Christmas with the Crawfords in San Francisco that made me go, wow, that guy is amazing. And I love how subtle he is, because we're so used to the kind of bigger, broader, what a dump type Betty Davis impersonators, which I adore as well, but here was something very different, and I went, oh my God, that would really work well on film. And I kind of I remember sitting in the audience just fantasizing about Baby Jane, but thinking to myself, well, what a ridiculous idea to try to do a parody, dark retelling of that movie. I mean, that would just be ridiculous, wouldn't it? And but it's what I ended up doing.
To great acclaim.
Yeah, no, it did. That's what was really shocking, is that then the reviews started coming out and they all looked at it very differently than I ever thought that they would, is they were thinking how clever and how different, and they'd never seen anything like it, and that it was subtle, and it had dark moments, and it had moments where you cared about her, and on and on and on. I went, oh my God, I guess I may have something here. And I really realized it was then time to come back to LA and see if I could keep on continuing with this dream. And now I'm 100% not doubtful. That's an interesting way to say it, that I can continue doing this. I can continue to grow and expand and move with this particular niche market, but also move out of this niche market at the same time. So that is my goal, and I will meet that goal.
I am sure you will. When we come back, I want to talk to you about your famous cousin and your family and get into some of the nuts and bolts of your latest film, Hush Up.
Everything Nicholas Snow is available at NicholasSnow.com. For our video programming, check out NicholasSnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. The snowstorm continues after this.
New designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revival. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revival. Find it here. Visit us at revivalstores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November, because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
And I'm talking with writer-director Billy Clift, who I've just discovered I could sit and talk with you for hours, I can already tell, so we'll have to do that at some point. So you have cousin.
Yeah, I got a little, it's just something that you're born into. It's not, but yeah, that Montgomery Clift was a cousin of mine, and we were always brought up knowing that he was someone we were connected to. His brother, actually, I never met Monty. I'm so young, but I did know his brother, Brooke Clift, because Brooke lived here in Los Angeles where Monty lived in New York. And Brooke was, we were the only family he had in Los Angeles, he used to come over for like Thanksgiving and Easter and, different typical holiday things. And so I knew him as a kid, and he died not that long ago, about 15 years ago, I believe, of the same thing that Monty died of.
And what did Monty die of?
Well, that's a really good question, because in reality, we've found that the papers were kind of cleaned up, so to speak, because he had the same thing. Celiac disease was one of the things that he did have. And back then, they didn't know how to treat it. Plus, he was addicted to prescription drugs all the way back from his accident. His car accident, which happened, I believe, in 1956, after leaving Elizabeth Taylor's house. Lizzie always said that she and I were going to open up a business and call it Montgomery Clift. She thought that would be hilarious. Anyway,
that would have been funny.
Yeah, that would have been very funny. it's a combination of things. He also still continued to drink as well, along with these prescription drugs. It was a time when doctors would just continuously just prescribe things to you without knowing what would occur afterwards. You know, I believe that he was also in pain, just like Elizabeth Taylor. We know that Elizabeth Taylor was always in back pain. So she was always going in and out of having problems with prescription drugs. It was part of the period and the time as well. I remember even as a kid, neighbors, doctors' wives were always so popped up on drugs because of their husbands would just go, "Oh, you're not feeling well? Here, take this." You know, "Oh, you got a hurt toe? Here, take this." It was that time. Which I think a lot of people today don't understand.
So when you say that they died of the same thing, I'm assuming that you're referring to alcoholism and drug addiction was basically
exactly
what led to their deaths. I gotcha.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, but also, he did have the celiac disease, which they did not know how to really treat at that time. I remember that what he was given to eat, or his doctor said that he should eat, was raw beef. And, things that a doctor today for someone who had that problem would never be eating, you know. So he was ripping up his insides all the time at the same time, you know. They just didn't know what they were doing as far as that was concerned.
Right. That's a fascinating connection, and we could talk about him forever, too. But let's bring the focus back to you. Even though you're living in L.A., the screening of your film, the official world premiere of your film in San Francisco, will be very exciting, because if there is a city that's filled with men and women and others that are bound to love your movie, it is San Francisco. And, of course, you lived there for a good decade and a half and have lots of connections there. So you must be really, really excited to not only have that premiere at the historic Castro Theater, but basically virtually on Halloween weekend.
Yes. Oh my God. I just can't believe that we're going to be able to do it at such a perfect timing. And in San Francisco, we also filmed it in San Francisco, right near Alamo Square, in a wonderful old mansion, there on Grove Street. And, it had to be in San Francisco. It's almost like, you know, when Milk came out, they had to, you know, the premiere was in San Francisco because it was filmed there and because Milk was from there. I'm not trying to put myself on that level as far as what an amazing, you know, person that they did a film about, but we made it there. We want to pay homage to the city. We have a lot of the stars are from there. And so that's really, really exciting, especially that amazing theater to be in. So I'm very, very excited about that. And, of course, as you said, it's that Wednesday just before Halloween. So it's a great rev up. So, I mean, all those people out there, if you're hearing it beforehand, I mean, how fun to start Wednesday night your week up to Halloween to start with us. You know, that'll get you going. Totally.
I forgot to mention at the top of the show that the reason I got to meet you was because you had a sneak peek of your film at Cinema Diverse, the Palm Springs LGBTQ Film Festival. And it was so lovely to meet you because, you know, I actually met you at a party without really knowing who you were. I like to hide in the corner at parties, which I think I mentioned to you. And you introduced yourself to me, say, hi, I'm Billy. And then the next day I found out, oh, you're the Billy Clift. And your film was one of the most talked about films of the festival. I love it, actually, when you get to meet someone and not really know their backstory. You're just meeting and the rest is a surprise.
Sweet.
At any rate, so in seeing the film, I have to say, first of all, I've never seen the original, but I've seen enough movies of that genre and sort of melodramatic storylines in black and white that I'm no stranger to it. But I was really impressed with the acting, and in particular, some actors really stand out. For example, Mink Stole. So I have watched Mink Stole's work in many different films. I knew she was in the film from the opening credits, but it took me 2/3 of the movie to realize who she was portraying in the movie because she was just so brilliantly that character.
And so different, isn't it? Isn't that wonderful? And that's what I've had from anyone who I've spoken to about it, who have seen, you know, a screening or the film, is they're just marveled by how she really became that character. We are very used to Mink Stole being Mink Stole in some kind of hyper overblown person often in a lot of the John Waters films. But this shows you that she can totally envelop a character. And you forget that that's Mink Stole, which is so exciting. And it shows you what a wonderful actress she is. She is on her own pace in the film. She's slower and she has a little bit broader dialect that's a little ridiculous. But if you see the original film, Agnes Moorehead was exactly the same way. You're like going, oh my God, Agnes is in another movie. And she was up for an Academy Award in that film. So she really nailed her and became her, which was so exciting for me as a director and so exciting for me to see one of my idols ever since I was a kid and I first saw Pink Flamingos at the New Art here in Santa Monica, I believe. And how exciting to have her be in one of my third feature film. I mean, I was just blown away.
And I think I remember you sharing with me that she was sitting near you in a screening of Baby Jane, and you commented about, will you tell the story? I've set it up. You tell what happened next.
Yes. She came. Baby Jane was playing in Chicago, which I actually just came back with Charlotte. Anyway, we were just about to screen Baby Jane and a film that she was in called Stuck. I think his name is Balderson. I can't remember his first name, was the director of that, kind of an obscure little fun film. She decided to check it out. And, because my name was, they said, this is Billy Clift. He's here, the director. She immediately came and sat next to me. And sat next to me through the entire film, which, oh my God, that would have been terrible if it was a terrible film. My God, I would have been so embarrassed. But thank goodness at the end, she looked at me and she grabbed my hand. She says, oh my God, that was amazing. It was just so spot on, right down the center. It was crazy at moments, but it was dark. I mean, she just went on and on and on. And I just laughed and I said, well, I mean, I can't believe you're just such an idol to me. And, you know, I have this dream that if I were ever to do another one, and this really does work, is to do Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. That would be my next film after this. And I would want you to play Velma. And she just squealed. And she said, oh, my God, I would die. She said, everybody has told me that I'm the poor man's Agnes Moorehead. And that was it. I mean, I was able to call her pretty much out of the blue and say, guess what? We're doing it. And she said, I'm in.
Fantastic. The film was called Stuck, and the director is Steve Balderson. I looked
Wonderful.
It up for
yeah,
you.
Lovely guy, too. I've hung out with him. What a sweet man.
I sort of want people to know this before they see Hush Up, Sweet Charlotte, because it's so surprising. So one of the characters that grabs you in the beginning of the film is someone that you're hoping shows up again but doesn't, that you know of. And it's this hairy-chested, hunky laborer off the veranda, a very compelling, in many ways, character. And then after the film, you tell me that that's actually Jeffrey Roberson, who created Varley Jean Merman, but portraying a man. And we went on to learn, as demonstrated in the film, that he's really an actor. But it so happens that his famous, most famous character is that of Varley Jean Merman, a woman.
Yes, exactly. And it was just such a fun coup that we, this is actually the first time he's ever played a man in a film. He's done it on stage many times, but this will be the first time that you will ever see him out of the Varla persona in a feature film. So we were really excited that he thought it would be a phenomenal idea to play a bit part, or but a very wonderful little part. You know, he had a lot of fun stuff going on there with Varla, with the two leads, Matthew Martin and Mink Stole, playing Charlotte and Velma, while they're on a balcony trying to shoot him. And it was just so great. And you just can't believe that this hunk, this handsome, big, who he's a big guy, very buff, big arms, everything, hairy, is actually this sweet, demure, big woman, but definitely soft and really you believe her. It could be the exact same person. And I just love that he's such a fine actor that he can actually be those two people. It was a fun coup. I'm so glad that we were able to do it.
Well, I'm still having sleepless nights over him. Yes.
It's funny because, you know, I'm writing Dead Ringer right now, which is my hopeful next trilogy, so to speak, of the that will end the Baby Jane, Hush Up Sweet Charlotte, and then Dead Ringer, which was Bette Davis's next film after Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte. And that would be kind of the end of my Bette Davis trilogy, so to speak, unless I'm demanded for more, whatever. But that's in my head, you know. And so he said, yeah, I hope that the man has a part two. And so I've made sure that there's a nice part for Stan, or whatever his name is going to be in this one. Actually, his name is Dan. He's a bartender. So he could be shirtless too, I guess, in the bar.
It works for me. I vote yes.
Yeah.
I've also known Jason Stewart for almost 30 years, and I appreciated how different his character is. A lot of his recent film roles are quite departures from what he has done historically, and I really enjoyed his character in the film.
I know, isn't he? It was so much fun to work with him. And he was so happy and gracious and, you know, ecstatic that three big words, that I was able to give him this place where he could experiment. We knew, I mean, it was very, very solid of who this character was in the script. I definitely did want to make him an English person who wasn't really from England, who created this kind of transatlantic dialect. And of course, I've got lots of background of who the person really, really was, and not what appears. We just had so much fun doing it. He just did a brilliant, consistent, beautiful job of rounding this person out on film. And as far as I know, I haven't seen everything he's done, but I think it's I think it's the best thing he's ever done. But let's wait for this Birth of the Nation that he got an amazing part in, which will be an incredibly different film than anything he's ever done, with a really good part in a major motion picture, which we're so excited about.
I love that. You know, I was pursuing acting for decades in L.A., and then I ended up in Thailand for 5.5 years, where I have actually developed a decent amount of film and television acting clips. I think it's never too late to have a successful acting career, and I'm not giving up. And I love it that Jason's career just continues to grow and evolve as well.
And that just shows you, that's a perfect example, right? Is that, you know, it just, it can continue to evolve. It just, your age has nothing to do with it. It's just the type of people you're going to be playing. But I believe that those older parts, and those more interesting parts, are going to be a lot more easier in some ways to find, as well as much more giving for an actor to actually have fun with than he would have in him in particular being young. It was a very hard place to put him. Yeah, I mean, he always played what the size, the kind of cracking a little joke or demanding or being bitchy or whatever, just kind of one-liners. And this film, finally, he's nothing like that. He's kind of soft and caring and a little odd, but it's a true full character, and it's so wonderful to see him do that. But as well as, yes, there is, you can continue, your career can continue, you can flourish, you can like move into the next stage, and I think that'd be, it'd be much more exciting. I know I'm always wish that I acted, and now I'm even looking at that, and even by what you're saying, it's like makes me go, wow, I could even do a little bit of acting now that I'm older and maybe looking a little diabolic or something. So I'd love to do that too.
Okay, well, we'll keep each other posted. I think you're likely to be in a position to cast me before I'm in a position to cast you. But we do know
that's
that whatever
true.
You do, I can at the very least promote you. So
we love that.
Yes, I always tell people if you cast me, you get built-in publicity. That's the benefit
great.
Of being. That's the benefit of being a promo homo. So. What would you like to address that we might not have talked about, either directly related to Hush Up, Sweet Charlotte, or what's next, or anything and everything?
Well, yeah, I think what's next. I think where I'm going next right now, my dream is to do the biopic of Montgomery Clift. I mean, and so a few months ago, has it been almost a few months? About a month and a half, I was able to shoot a short film that I'm calling Monty, which is a dream. It's the last day of his life, and he's looking through important moments of his life are coming up for him as he's about to die. That's what this short is about. And this, my dream, my personal dream, is to get this turned into a feature film. Matt Bomer and HBO are set to do a feature, and it made me feel that it was very important to get this dream that I've had for so long, that's always been there, always in the back burner. What it did is it forced me to get on top of it. I created the short to actually create to get money for the feature. I really realized that when I create, I put it out into the universe, so to speak, or I create something, it seems to just come easier for me. It helps me be able to see what I'm doing, imagine what I'm doing, and move forward with the project. I even did that with Charlotte. It wasn't until I did a short teaser of the film did someone go, oh, that's what you're doing, and they gave me the financing for it. And so I will continue, as I said, with Monty. And so I'm working, I'm even doing a little short, doing a little more filming this Saturday with the Marilyn Monroe and the Montgomery Clift character, of doing some behind the scenes, as if they were behind the scenes of working on The Misfits. And we're going to go up to Griffith Park near the horses and have them walk around with them. So that is truly something very deep in my heart. It's important to my family that he be portrayed, and I want to portray him very broadly, as far as see all the different aspects of himself in this film, as well as what a funny and fun and good human being and good friend he was to the people who were his friends. Because, of course, we always hear about how tragic he was and how sad. And yes, this little short is going to show the sadness of how people can get trapped into this kind of a cycle. But also, let's also see what a wonderful, fun, and giving and caring human being he was. And that, of course, will help people get to understand him more. And what a fine actor. People don't know who he is. The majority of people don't know that Montgomery Clift was one of the biggest box office stars in the 50s. And it's important that he be known as well, just like Rock Hudson and James Dean and on and on and on. So it's an important legacy that I contribute to this. And so it's very deep to my heart that I create this project.
Well, kudos to you for that. And when you're ready to promote that more, I would love to. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention one other person. You know, we met at a party, and I didn't see you or your film, and someone else that I noticed at that party but actually did not have the opportunity to meet. But I thought, who is this woman with such energy? And that's your sister. I'd love for you to just say a little bit about your sister.
Well, my sister is always she's an actress as well and is always –
And her name's – did you say her name's Elizabeth?
Uh-huh, Elizabeth Clift.
Okay.
And she's – Oh, you know, ever since I was a little kid, she's 10 years older than I, always been in the industry. She started on stage at 15 in The Miracle Worker with Mercedes McCainbridge and playing the Helen Keller role. And she went on and on and on. And getting married and all that kind of stuff kind of shifted her career. But she's done quite a few stage productions, and she continues to do things. And right now she's getting her PhD. And so during this time, you know, I'm going, oh, why don't you do a little part in which she was in Charlotte, as well as she'll get a little part in anything I do. She'll get some little thing in it so that she can keep her little toe in it and have fun. She'll be up there in San Francisco, and she was there for the screening in Palm Springs. But she's just, you know, like a wonderful little muse, and she's just so incredibly supportive of what I do. And, of course, she's incredibly supportive of getting this Montgomery Clift project off the ground as well. But always there for her, and she's always there for me.
I love that. So earlier in the interview, you did talk about your book, Everything is Going to Be Just Fine, but you left out the most important part of the title, The Ramblings of a Mad Hairdresser.
That's
so
true.
I'd like to know, I see the entertainment value of that title, but did you ever think at one point you were actually a rambling mad hairdresser?
Definitely. After she passed away, I definitely thought I was. I had some really interesting, I don't know if you call it spiritual or metaphysical experiences that occurred simultaneously with her passing, and things that I wasn't really into, so to speak. And one thing that happened is on the actual day of her passing, I all of a sudden felt that I was in her bedroom, and I thought I was seeing her toss and turn and making these deep guttural breathing. And I was like going, oh, my God. And I even remember stopping and holding my head going, I don't know what's going on, but I'm having the weirdest dream, as if I'm having a dream, but I'm awake. And it continued on until I saw an end to this breathing. And there were more things in between as well that I kept on seeing. And I didn't believe it. I just thought that it was a crazy, crazy experience that had nothing to do with anything that was real, except the fact that I knew that my dear friend was dying and that I could possibly be imagining something. An hour later, I got a call from a friend of mine hearing that she heard on the radio that Elizabeth Montgomery had died that morning at the same time that I had these visions, so to speak. The next night, I was with her husband, Robert Foxworth, and I described some of these things, and they were exactly what happened. And it totally turned me into that rambling of a mad hairdresser, because I didn't know what was happening. And it just really, that was one of the things that really rattled me out of everything that I perceived, everything that I thought that was real, was being broken down. And, it just changed my point of view.
One of the things I didn't mention earlier is that I had the opportunity to meet both Robert Foxworth and Elizabeth Montgomery, because one of my first jobs in Hollywood was in public relations at Laura Martello Pictures during the time when he was on the lot. Was it Knott's Landing? I can't remember which show
Falcon
he was
Crest.
In. Falcon Crest.
Falcon
that's
Crest.
Right. Falcon Crest. Falcon Crest. There was Falcon Crest, Knott's Landing, Dallas. They're big shows then. But that's how come that I knew him. At any rate,
how cool is that?
It's great to meet you. I think you're really a cool guy. I meet a lot of people, but you're definitely someone that I'm very happy to have connected with, and I'm appreciative of your taking the time to be on the show today.
Oh, well, this has been a pure pleasure, and a pure pleasure to meet you. It was nice to stand and talk to you at the after party after Charlotte as well, and we were able to kind of, you know, chit-chat and have fun as well for a few minutes before I fell over and fell asleep. As one does after they've been, you know, working so hard for something, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know.
I know, you sleep well after something like that, though. I was just going to say, you probably don't sleep well when the audience doesn't love the movie, but in this case, they did, so you could sleep like a baby.
It was the biggest relief because, you know, that was the first big screening that we'd had of the film. And to sit there and listen to them laugh and get the jokes, you know, because that's what you're always worried about with a comedy, right? Is that hopefully that the jokes that you made up are funny. And, of course, I can only, you know, going back to what we said earlier, was I can only write what I think is funny. Which I think I'm pulling from, you know, things like Blazing Saddles and Carol Burnett's show, and it's that earlier style of comedy that I think is always there. That's what makes me laugh. So that's what I write down. Sit here and do the next movie, Dead Ringer, and just like go, okay, what's now going to happen? Oh yeah, she's going to shove a tiara, she's going to jewelry. All of a sudden, she's going to be in front of the mirror, looking at herself, enjoying herself, and then realize that the sister is looking at her, and then she just drops. You know, I mean, what's funny to me? You know, it's really, really fun to do that.
Well, one of my favorite lines from Hush Up, Sweet Charlotte is, "You're the Rhoda, I'm the Mary."
And you know, that was such a ridiculous thing. And of course, that's from, what film was that that I love so much? And it's even that humor was very old style humor from that movie. I ripped that off from. And of course, you know, I mean, that television show was way after. This was supposed to be like 1964, and it was the 70s.
Well,
that's
why
on.
It is even funnier. It's even funnier.
Yeah,
that makes
yeah.
it even funnier.
It made me laugh, you know, so that's why I put it in.
We should mention that you produced this film with here. What is the name of their parent company that produces movies? I know they have Here TV, but what wing of it?
I guess this is considered Here Media.
Here Media
Entertainment. Yeah, Here Media is that kind of the umbrella, so to speak, which of course owns Out Magazine, Advocate.
The Advocate. Yes.
Yeah.
Out Traveler. You name it.
Yeah, they really own the whole LGBTQS and whatever, you know, just the whole mega HIV plus magazine. And, you know, I just found out recently that's what they make their most money from as far as magazines. That's where they make their most money is HIV plus magazine.
Probably
you can imagine.
Pharmaceutical advertising.
Exactly. But it's also a really good magazine, which is so I'm so happy that that's there as well. But yeah, so they've got their fingers in everything. I'm excited that they put their fingers here.
Well, kudos for them. Kudos to them and to you for this film. I'm jealous that I'm not going to be at that screening, that premiere in San Francisco, because that would be such a fun time. But you're welcome on my show anytime that you want to promote something, and I look forward to the next time our paths cross in the real world.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. And I know I will be there for Pride, so hopefully
Oh, you'll be here for Pride.
See you then. Yes, I always go to Pride in Palm Springs. I just love it there.
Well, we have to make that happen. I will be in the parade, actually, waving, doing my parade wave.
Well,
I can't tell you.
Come
out and give
something.
Yeah, that would be great. It's not officially announced yet as to why I'm going to be in the parade. I'm getting an honor, but I cannot. It's not up to me to announce publicly what the honor is. But that's why I'm in the parade, and so it will be a great day.
Well, whatever it is, it's got to be fabulous, and it's wonderful that you're in it. How cool is that?
It's very cool. It's wonderful that we're all in life together, and I appreciate knowing you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. What a pleasure. What a pleasure. We'll talk again soon.
I look forward to it. I've been talking to Billy Clift, and you've been listening to... I just turned my mic off. I was talking to Billy Clift. He's a great guy, and you're going to love the film, especially if you have a frame of reference of these older, classic, black-and-white, melodramatic movies. But even if you don't have that frame of reference, this is a very entertaining film because I didn't see the original, and I loved the parody. And definitely, Billy Clift is the person to follow. One of them, and thank you for listening. You're fabulous as well.
We are, in fact, connecting the circuitry of humanity. All of us connected. Please continue to connect with Nicholas Snow on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, Instagram, Google+, and other social networks. Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. This program is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. Thank you for being a part of the Snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.